Hi everyone, welcome to the B2B Sales Podcast. I'm Thibaut.
And I'm Ara.
Every second and fourth week of the month, we interview thought leaders, experts, or top performers in B2B sales.
During 30 to 45 minutes, we will deep dive into topics like modern prospection, pipeline management tactics, or innovative sales tools to help you navigate the complex world of B2B sales.
We're on a mission to change the way society sees sales. This profession is one of the most rewarding ever, yet many people are afraid to do sales or they choose this career by default.
So get ready for your dose of sales wisdom and enjoy the show.
Hi everyone, welcome to the B2B Sales Podcast. So today on the show, I have my good friend Andy Green.
Hello, yeah, it's nice to be here.
So before Andy gets started, just want to tell you a quick story. So we actually met with Andy at Applause in 2015. He arrived, I think, 2 weeks before or after me. And yeah, we went to a web summit together in Dublin. It was the last time it was actually happening in Dublin. And yeah, we had a lot of fun, didn't work too much, but like had a lot of beers. And yeah, we worked together for a while. And then, you know, I left, he left, and he's working now into a new company. So yeah, tell us a bit more about that.
Yeah, that was a great time in Dublin. So, yeah. So I'm at cobalt.io. And we do manual pen testing as a service. So I put a new spin on how pen testing is delivered. I am my role there, I head up the sales team for EMEA and APAC. So as a company, we're about 6 years old. We opened up in Europe only a year and a half ago.
Okay.
Testing the waters there. And after 6 months, decided to put more structure on the team, bringing in essentially me and a few of the account executives. And we'll get into how the BDR team within that is built as well. So prior to Cobalt, I was at various companies in different types of sales position. So one time as the first salesperson in the org. And then a couple of experiences later, moved over to Applause, which is much more of a, you know, fast growing company, especially within Berlin. And that's also where I had my first real management experience.
Yeah.
So before I stepped into sales properly, I had a small tourism company.
Yeah.
Which is quite cool for about a year. Just two people, and then we'd use freelancers as and when we needed them. And as a teenager, I ran some import-export operation. You know, before Shopify dropshipping became really popular. So I was very much on the crest of the wave there. I feel like I single-handedly started the whole movement.
So you're the father of dropshipping, I guess. Yeah,
yeah, from my parents' bedroom.
Cool. So yeah, actually, that's something I didn't know about, the tourism and import-export, that you were an entrepreneur. So, you know, because we mostly were joking around and you know, talking about different things, but not too much business together. But like, can you tell me a bit more about this tourism thing? Because I'm super curious about that.
Yeah, so I went to the University of Leeds, which is around 40,000 people. Okay. And the city as a whole across the universities has about 80,000 students, loads of international students, or even just from, you know, different parts of the UK. Mm-hmm. And typically, I don't know if you know, if you're from the south of the UK, south of England,
yeah,
you don't go to the north very often.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
So it's their first experience when they're heading up to Leeds for university. And we noticed that there are a lot of things that people can do on a weekend, of course. One of the things is to take trips out of the city. Mm-hmm. The university had it covered from the point of view of the trips that go to major cities.
Yeah.
Whether, you know, fill a coach of people to Liverpool and then just pretty much wait for the day while they go and explore and then take them back. So we had much more of a value-added approach. Mm-hmm. Where we would sell the trips based on the monument or the artifacts that you would find in the place, whether that's a castle or a particular bit of coastline or whatever that might be, something fairly unique or historical, and run guided tours.
Okay.
And so that's how the company was born. And interesting thing about that, we shut it down after about a year. I went and joined a company in Barcelona. My business partner moved to London for a different role. And he's actually moved back to Leeds recently and reopened it.
Okay.
So that's quite nice to see.
That's cool. Do you still own shares or?
No.
Okay, unfortunately. Okay, cool. So thanks for the nice story. So actually today I invited Andy on the podcast for a topic that I think it will be very interesting for a lot of you. So Andy actually built the BDR/SDR team at cobalt.io. And yeah, so he's going to tell us a bit more about that. So yeah, okay, why don't you jump in and tell us about this story?
Sure. So when I joined Cobalt, we had around three SDRs in total and maybe one MDR. Mm-hmm. So the difference there, as far as we define it anyway, the SDRs were doing outbound, cold prospecting. The MDRs would utilize marketing resources. Mm-hmm. So events and white paper downloads.
Okay.
In order to try and generate opportunities for the AE team.
Okay.
So, and these were split basically. So we had the SDRs are under sales and there was a team in the US. There was no team in EMEA at the moment or in mm-hmm. Berlin. So it was my job to build that up.
Okay.
So I started to hire people for that team. We got underway, booking in meetings, bringing in new opportunities. And after a couple of months, we decided as an organization to bring these two units together.
Okay.
Because there was, I mean, we had too many problems with attrition, who gets credit for what. Also, people are kind of siloed too much where they should be able to have access to essentially each other's channels. Mm-hmm. So we merged the two together, formed the BDR team where they can do, you know, outbound, they can use all of the resources that marketing bring. And then now responsible for territories and figure out the best way to target people in that territory rather than also being restricted by channel.
Okay. So from what I understand, you basically now, if you're a BDR, let's say I'm a BDR now at Cobalt, I can have like, my goal is to gather a certain amount of points, I guess, based on like if I book something outbound or inbound, right?
Where, as long as it's a valid opportunity that comes in, we're pretty agnostic about where it comes
okay.
from.
Okay.
So, I mean, there are going to be different things that happen in different territories, like dinners or conferences and stuff like that. And so the BDR is free to use those. Obviously, we guide them and we have there's a lot of training on that and best practices. But whether or not they book in an opportunity referencing an event or inviting somebody there, and then we get a meeting off the back of that, or they just do it cold, for us, they're of equal value.
Okay, I see. Okay, perfect. And so you told me like you told me off that you had like the numbers of like qualified opportunities generated went from a certain number to another one. Can you really tell us about that and how you did that?
Yeah. So yeah, just a quick point. When we started to build the BDR team, we decided to focus it in Berlin. Mm-hmm. I have the team built almost exclusively here.
Yeah.
And as I was the only manager on the sales side or marketing side within the company, that fell to me to build. We now have a BDR manager in place who is essentially taking the reins there and is really, really adding a lot of structure to the team. So from a numbers point of view, yeah, I think we're booking about reliably maybe 30 meetings a month across the SDR and MDR teams. And now we've built that from a team of sort of four or five in total to a couple in Berlin. Now we have 9 BDRs.
Okay.
Each booking at least 10 on average. So we're looking at, we're approaching 100 a month, maybe around 95. We're hovering around.
Okay. So just I'll pause you in there. So just like it's from 30 to around 100. So it's more than 3% increase since you actually rolled out this this new structure, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, great. That's pretty amazing. One little thing. So we hear a lot of things in sales. You have MQL, SQL, whatever. But in your case, what you said is like a qualified opportunity. It's like the metric you try to aim for. What's the definition of a qualified opportunity at Cobalt?
So when we first started the BDR team and prior to that, we had one definition. Which was, I mean, the main thing was just to keep things as simple as possible, build the team and get them firing, bringing in opportunities that look good as far as you can tell online, basically.
Okay.
So is it the right person? Is it the right company? Are they likely to hold the budget? Are they likely to be the decision maker? Now that we've added more structure to the team, we're underway. We have a proven model in the markets that we're targeting there. We're adding more criteria. For example, they're going to be... they're going to become tomorrow on SQL, so they're going to have to start jumping on the phone with the person of each opportunity they bring in, making sure that there's an opportunity that's going to be in a reasonable time frame, that there's budget in place, whether or not they hold it, and that they're related to the decision in a major way. If they're not a decision maker, just the classic BANT stuff, really.
Yeah, yeah.
And that will be more what's considered a qualified opportunity now. So
okay.
Looking at SQLs. As opposed to just, you know, opportunities that look good online.
Yeah. Okay. So you use like something like BANT, I would say in a very liberal way. So you, but that's okay. Okay. I see. Yeah. Cause actually I don't know if you remember, but like at the time when we were working at Applause, we had like a discovery competition, like grassroots competition.
Yeah.
And there was a rep who didn't stay long, but like he was booking discovery calls with janitors and interns or something like that to get the competition. So he grabbed a few of the trophies by having like kind of like discovery calls with an intern who's been there for 2 weeks. So it was it was something definitely very fun.
I think he booked about 12 meetings with his uncle.
That was pretty fun at the time. So qualified opportunities is always something very important for me. When I, you know, like when I started like this gig that I'm doing right now, I was just like, hey, helping people do like as many discovery calls as they can. And obviously like qualified opportunities are insanely important, especially in a company like yours. Cause if you're an early stage company, it's fine to have like a lot. So you get like feedback, but when you know who you're selling to and that you have a product or offering that works, yeah, it's good to talk to the right person.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can waste so much time.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so yeah, so you said you took the team like from 4 or 5 SDRs, as you said, MDR, SDR to 9 BDR. Can you tell me a bit about the recruitment process, the hiring, how you run that?
Yeah, actually, most of the guys that we had as SDRs and MDRs before have been promoted into different positions.
Okay.
So we, of the 9 BDRs that we have now, 8 of them were hired across maybe a 5-month period.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty quickly.
Yeah.
There's no way to avoid the amount of, I mean, I obviously spent a lot of time trying to figure out, you know, how to do this in a smart way,
mm-hmm,
how to be most efficient with it. But I think the nature of the role means that there's no real way to avoid wading through CVs,
yeah,
as they get sent in. Especially because with this role, generally speaking, you're not going to hire someone with 10, 15 years proven track record.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to try and figure out based on very little information, whether or not this is going to be a good fit.
Yeah.
And so that means you're going to have to interview a lot of people and spend a lot of time doing that and then come up with ways to quickly qualify or disqualify them.
Mm-hmm.
Focusing heavily on disqualifying people as early as you can.
Yeah. Can I stop you there? So how do you disqualify early?
You got to drive, at least to me anyway, you've got to drive into their motivation.
Okay.
This role often attracts people that they don't know what they want to do.
Mm-hmm.
And fair enough, that can be also valid.
Yeah.
And we'll come to that later. We open the door at Cobalt for them to pursue different avenues within go-to-market.
Mm-hmm.
But if their motivation is simply to take a job, pay the bill, not really progress, they're not up for a challenge, they just want something to keep them ticking over day by day. That's, to be honest, that's the major red flag.
Okay.
And sometimes it's easier to spot than in other cases. I mean, I had one guy who, within the first couple of minutes of the call, had no idea what the name of the company was. So, okay, this isn't going to last too long.
Yeah.
And with other people, you know, you find out a little bit later down the line as you start to gather more of a picture of who they are and what they're looking to do. Either they're, you know, if they're moving to Berlin for the role, it's generally a good sign.
Mm-hmm.
Also with Berlin, it can also be a bad sign.
Yeah.
But I guess in most places, if someone's willing to move, then, you know, it's an indication that they're taking things seriously.
Yeah.
Or if they're just looking to plug a gap before they, you know, before they go home or find something that they actually want to do.
Yeah, exactly. And actually on that, there was actually another guest who's going to come on the podcast. We worked with him. It's actually Paul Friedrich. Yeah. And he had a really great question that he's always asking. And he told me, he's like, in the interview, he's like, something like, are you coming for Berlin or for the job? And you'd be super surprised, but a lot of people say, I'm coming for Berlin. And so for him, it's like, it's a big red flag, because a lot of people are coming here just to, you know, to party and enjoy the lifestyle. And so this is typically not the right kind of people we want to have in this kind of job.
No, exactly. You want people that are looking to build a career.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. And so do you have, let's say, yeah, as we're in hiring and recruitment, do you have like one question you ask that is like, let's say, your go-to question to understand like who's the person you're talking to?
I do. So of course we cover all the basics about quota carrying stuff they've done in the past, their motivation for the role, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
All the basics. But one thing I hit on, and I didn't realize that it was a fairly unique question until we got to the end of the interview. I explained to the guy what the next steps are going to be, and that I think it was a, you know, really positive session, and mm-hmm, you know, my feedback will be good. And his response was simply, yeah, it's been interesting and unusual as an interview, right? So I was racking my brain trying to think of what I did that was different to the other experiences I might have had. Mm-hmm. We just didn't have time for me to ask him on the spot. And I think it was a simple question that I've used since, and that's basically, on a scale of 1 to 10, how hard do you work? And so what I'm looking for there is basically how, firstly, I want to know how they think on the spot, because mm-hmm. chances are they've not been asked that question before.
Yeah.
Obviously, if everybody starts doing it now, it'll kill the impact. I've got to go find something else. I'm looking for something that's more than a generic answer. You know, I'll try to work smart and not so hard, or
yeah,
you know, I work 10 out of 10 every day. There's no stopping me, stuff like that.
Yeah.
Something a bit more nuanced that shows that they're able to think on the spot. So if we put them on a phone with a prospect, they're not going to get caught out.
Yeah.
But also shows that they're willing to put in, they're willing to grind it out, especially with a BDR role. So there's room within the role, obviously, to be strategic, mm-hmm. clever about your approach.
Yeah.
But ultimately, you've also got to scale up the effort.
Okay.
So that role, that question can actually tell you quite a lot.
Okay. Yeah, so let me try and answer this question as if I was in an interview. just try and shoot it just like as if I was interviewing for the job.
All right. Okay, so last question for me. On a scale of 1 to 10, Tibau, how hard do you work?
That's a pretty tough question. So I'd say 6. I know it sounds pretty, you know, pretty low, but like typically, I'm not someone who's working really hard. Typically from maybe 20, 30 hours a week, that's what I would do. But like why I would say it's a bit different is like, I'm really very often thinking about work in my, you know, it's like in my job. So like the last 2 weeks, for example, it's been really hard for me to sleep because I was doing like dreams about work. I was just thinking about it in the middle of the night, waking up, it just like, then I couldn't find sleep anymore. So I'm not working so hard, but I'm like in my job where I do a lot of sales training, coaching and advices, I have to be aware of everything around me in sales and all the new trends. So I spend like a ton of time listening to podcasts, watching videos, like getting, you know, familiar with all these terms. So yeah, I think that's what I would answer if I was, you know, if you were hiring a sales coach or sales trainer, actually.
Yeah. And for that role, that would be a perfect answer, I think.
Yeah. For a BDR role, I guess, no. I don't know.
I'd be hoping they would at least back themselves to be working at least 8 out of 10 consistently, and then higher when needed.
But you know, like, I don't know.
People to burn out, but to work hard consistently is very important for this role.
Okay. Yeah, I think like, that's working hard consistently is super important. But what I've seen is a lot of people are really talented at these kind of jobs, and they can work like 10 hours a week and get their quota. So I think it's something very important as a manager to be able to see when someone is coasting and just like doing the minimum, which is very common here in this city. So I think it's pretty interesting. Actually, that's a good transition question. So how do you manage these kind of people? Like, so how do you, what kind of tools, metrics you use to actually track the performance of BDRs?
That's a really tough one. And that's going to develop over time. So what we're talking about here, or at least what I was responsible for, was taking it from pretty much zero, at least in Berlin, or the BDR team was completely new, mm-hmm. up to a functioning unit.
Yeah.
And so I tracked one thing. At least one thing went into their comp plan, and that was simply the number of opportunities that they bring in.
Okay.
Very quickly, we developed that to number of opportunities, but also their disqualification rate mm-hmm. from the AEs. And of course, that's something you've got to track if they have a particularly good relationship, maybe they've got to let stuff slide. But one thing we have at COBOL is whenever an opportunity is booked in, it goes on Slack under mm-hmm. one of the channels. Everyone can see it.
Okay.
So it's like that kind of a little bit of social, the celebration, but there's also social pressure to make sure that you're not booking in the meetings. As you said before, you can't book in 12 meetings with janitors at different companies.
Yeah.
Because that's going to be, I mean, the whole company can see that from top to bottom.
Yeah. Okay.
So we'll celebrate the wins, but that's also a nice little way to make sure that people are proud of the meetings that they're mm-hmm. bringing in.
Okay.
Kind of playing on the intrinsic motivation as well.
Okay, I see. And so you told me also like that the culture of the team was something very important. Can you tell me maybe about the culture, how things are at COBOL, and you know, like how do you make sure people are just like performing and still being happy in the job?
Yeah, so with the BDRs, the first thing we do is make sure that they're in the same room.
Okay.
Which, as we said, I mean, if this is a role that's attracting people that are fairly junior in their career, they're trying to figure out who they are, what they want to do, which I think by now is probably the majority case with BDRs. Mm-hmm. I mean, you see some guys that have 10, 15 years experience, and that's great, but I think that's unusual now.
Okay.
We've got to make sure that they can see each other. They're part of a team. They feel more of that spirit purely by being in the same room to start with.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can share each other's wins. They can learn from each other very quickly. You know, much more off the cuff than if it was a distributed team or there were maybe one or two people per office that you have as a company.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing. Also making sure that they have regular sessions with their AE. So the AE who's going to be more experienced can either drive them in a certain direction or pat them on the back for doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
Like both are completely valid and should be utilized.
Yeah.
And it also, I mean, that's one step as well towards giving the BDR the much bigger picture of what's going on at the company. So, I mean, I guess the typical trend with B2B is as the company's growing, you hit product market fit for the first time. If it's SaaS or maybe a service that's not wildly expensive, then you're going to get a ton of inbound leads and you can drive the business there.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, you're going to start leaning more and more on the outbound channel.
Yeah.
In other words, the BDR team, the AEs are going to box some stuff in themselves, but then bulk of it will come from the BDRs.
Mm-hmm.
And giving them that responsibility and making it clear that this is a team that's been relied upon to grow the company is a real way to get, especially to get a lot of like individual buy-in, give people pride about what they do,
mm-hmm.
let them feel that.
Yeah.
Rather than, you know, as I've seen at some companies where, you know, talking to people at different firms where the BDRs are essentially put in a room together and they're now the lead generation factory and it's referred to like that in the organization. It gives them an assembly line feel, like they're just, you know, one part. It kind of diminishes the role.
Exactly, yeah.
So I would lean more towards integrating them with each other,
mm-hmm.
ideally in the same room with regular meetings, also with their AEs. They can learn a lot more that way. And also giving them a perspective into what might happen next if they succeed in the role. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so do you have is there like a ratio BDR to AE? Is it like one BDR, one AE? How does it work for the distribution of leads?
It depends on the segment.
Mm-hmm.
So if, particular segment for us is quite heavy on the inbounds.
Okay.
So with smaller companies, SMBs, and they have less BDR support. Most of the BDR support is going into corporate, say 200 to 1,000 employees, and then enterprise above that.
Mm-hmm.
Where they have more of a one-to-one relationship. And with the SMBs, it's more 1 to 2, some cases 1 to 3, depending on the distribution of leads that come in.
Okay. Okay, good. And so regarding, let's say, because you said one big thing is Cobalt is growing pretty fast. In terms of career path, what are the options when you're BDR starting at Cobalt?
So that's actually one thing that we'll cover during the interview process,
mm-hmm.
where they want to go. Within the organization or just within their career generally. And if they're focused on going, you know, staying within the go-to-market functions, then the doors at Cobalt are open to them. So we're talking about BDR that can go from junior to senior. If they want to change track and go into more of a managerial role, then this will be open, especially as we double the size of the team again.
Mm-hmm.
And they can also switch it up and move more into direct sales, so become an account executive and work their way up through that
mm-hmm.
channel. Or marketing is open.
Okay.
As well as customer success is the final option. So they've got a lot that they can pursue.
Okay. So it's more like the entry into like a business, you know, let's say position as you would say. And then like, if you like doing it, you can become senior, or you can also like manage a team if you're more into management, and then you can become AE if you want to be quota carrying, or customer success if you want to be more chill, or marketing, right? So that's like, yeah, some customer success super important. It's let's say not as fast paced as new business or this kind of thing, but it's, so these are the options you have there, right?
Yeah, and of course, they've got to prove themselves every step of the way.
Mm-hmm.
We map it all out, especially as they're going from junior to senior, et cetera, within a particular department.
Mm-hmm.
And we make it clear what they need to do in order to switch things out.
Okay, good. Now, in terms of challenges that you face, because it was a pretty fast turnaround, so like 5 to 6 months, you said. Can you tell me a bit more about like different challenges you had to tackle?
The biggest challenge for me personally was the amount of time it takes to recruit people and then to onboard them
mm-hmm.
one at a time.
Okay.
Obviously, you don't have to do it one at a time, but we wanted to build this team out as quickly as we can.
Yep.
So as soon as the individual could start, we brought them in and I would onboard them.
Mm-hmm.
So from in terms of the time it takes to recruit, you know, the challenges we covered before about a lot of people not really knowing what they want to do. Maybe they move to Berlin in particular for the city and not mm-hmm. the role and not a career. Stuff that's very hard to find on a CV, especially yeah. if they're fresh out of university or they've had one or two roles in particular. You've got to speak to these people and really, really dig into it,
mm-hmm.
Which I enjoy doing, you know, meeting new people, finding out their motivations, but it's a hell of a drain on time.
Yeah.
At the moment, I've not found a smart way to do that. So I'm open to ideas. But from an onboarding point of view, what I would do in future is bring in BDRs in small groups
yeah.
and essentially have the class of 2020 Q1 or H1 2020 yeah. or something like that, and bring people in small groups.
Okay. Okay, I see. And so, because like that's something that is very interesting, to be able to do like a sales academy or university, this kind of thing. What I noticed, I've seen a few companies doing that, is that you lose a lot of time like waiting for people to start, especially in Europe, where let's say if you want to hire someone, you have to wait for 1 to 3 months for them to be actually coming into your office first day for their first day.
Yeah.
So would you actually be willing to sacrifice, let's say, speed for, let's say, a better onboarding? That's what you're saying?
The other factor would be when we're growing the AE team, because we're bringing them in to support a growing AE team. That's why we grow the BDR team, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if we can time it such that it doesn't delay the AEs coming in and closing deals, generating revenue at the back end, then I would personally sacrifice a bit of time there
yeah.
in order to make sure that we'll have a better onboarding experience. Yeah.
Okay. And so in terms of the average onboarding time, is it like in months, in weeks for BDR?
So the time to prospect is generally within a week.
Mm-hmm.
We can get them up and running pretty quickly there.
Okay.
And I think it's also the best way to learn. Jump in and start seeing what responses you get.
Yeah.
The time for them to be on a full quarter, the first 2 months they have a discounted quarter, basically.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And then by month three, they're up and running fully. We're expecting the full performance okay. from them.
Okay, cool. And so in all this experience of building this team, what would you do differently?
One thing I would do differently from the onboarding point of view, especially because with the BDR role, where, like I say, we're bringing in people that it might be earlier on in their career.
Mm-hmm.
It's very likely to be the first role they've had within this industry
yeah.
or targeting this type of person, even if they've had BDR experience in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm one of the most laborious tasks within the PDR, say portfolio of activities, is building lists.
Yeah.
So in the past, we've given them territories, an idea of who we want to be speaking to.
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing they do is build that list.
Yeah.
I think they should do that. It's a really good exercise. But I would also give them a list of, say, 500 good prospects in their territory
yeah.
to go out right from the start. I mean, one of the main reasons for that is that they can learn over time what a good prospect looks like.
Mm-hmm.
They can find out for themselves some of the responses that they get, and also looking at the, you know, all of the deals that were closed and see the patterns. And mm-hmm. we can make that really clear for them during the first week. But it's also good for them to experience some quick wins.
Yeah.
Start booking in some meetings, build their confidence, get their name out within the organization.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, if they can book in a meeting within the first couple of weeks at the company, like I say, on Slack, that goes out to everybody.
Yeah.
That's great for their motivation and their confidence.
Yeah.
And it also, you know, it cuts out one of the most time consuming tasks.
Yeah.
Just building lists.
So then, because that's obviously something like building lead lists, like enrich with emails or LinkedIn profile or phone numbers, is something that is super time consuming, but it's super valuable in outbound. You need that.
Yeah.
So who would do that then if not the BDR?
So by now, we're quite fortunate because enough people have come in and populated Salesforce with enough mm-hmm. data over the past 6 years and approaching 2 years in Europe. I'm with a BDR team that's already gone through it, that we could get a decent list together simply by pulling a report.
Yeah.
If not, then I really think it would be worth spending the little bit of money it would take to have a freelancer do it.
Yeah.
And start relying on people from outside, especially if all we're talking about is finding emails
yeah.
and they wouldn't need to be onboarded, have access to something. It's just a job that they could do
mm-hmm.
if it's a new territory or something like that. they could do that fairly quickly and make sure the BDR is the best possible start.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, actually, that's something. Quick plug there. There's a company called Dash Dash. I've worked with a lot. Actually, built a workflow for that where it's kind of an API spreadsheet. It looks like a Google spreadsheet, and you can pull data and build lead lists like extremely fast. So you get data from Crunchbase, from a lot of database you want, and then you get this data to be cleaned and enriched through the Hunter, zero bounds, and these kind of things, and then you can push it to your CRM. So
there are tools out there that can also do it.
Pardon?
There are tools out there.
Yeah, that can... exactly. There's a lot of tools and everything, but it's if you look at Salesforce, I don't know if it's still the case, but for example, they do have like sales analysts, they call that, that are doing, it's the first even BDR job or SDR job. It's like the internship entry level job where you have to scrape data. So it's I think it's something that's going to be kind of revolutionized in the next years, because that's, now we have the data, we can automate these kind of things, and I think it will increase the speed to actually get super qualified leads. So yeah, I think it's a pretty cool thing. So now I would be, I think we're like nearing the end of the time slot. So I'd be super interested in the plans for the future of Cobalt. So what's coming next?
From the BDR point of view.
Yeah.
So like I say, we've essentially gone from the team being non-existent, but split between SDR and MDR. And the next generation is to bring that in, as we did, into a unified BDR team, so they can access all channels and bring in opportunities based on their territory and the AE that they're supporting. The next step is to become more sophisticated with that. So we're going to introduce more qualification before they deliver the opportunity. So they'll have to jump on the phone with the prospect as they're looking to book in the meeting, and make sure that they're, decision maker, there's gonna be an opportunity within all the stuff that we've covered already. So that's gonna be the big next step. And I as it stands, that should be baked into their compensation plan. So we have also an element of like quality that's baked into the cake.
Yeah.
From that point of view, rather than just, meetings and using the other channels that we've talked about to make sure they're on track there. We're also gonna step into the past a little bit and start cold calling.
Okay.
See how that works with this particular persona. At the moment we're looking for BDRs that'll step up to the plate, take that on and see if it works. I'd be more than happy to join them doing that. I personally find it quite fun.
Okay, so I stopped you there. So Andy said he would be happy to do cold calling. So if anyone who's working with Andy is listening to this podcast, use that against him, please.
Oh, Jesus.
Not going to cut that.
Great, yeah. So that's, I guess for a lot of people, that feels like a step into the past. But we're also going to explore other opportunities, like integrating video, personalized videos and stuff like that. I mean, the BDR role is obviously changing. Prospecting is changing. There's no fixed way to do it.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of ways to do it well.
Exactly.
And so we want to make sure that we're covering all of these angles. And of course, when it comes to a BDR point of view, and especially as the team grows, people are going to excel in different areas. You got to have people that pick up the phone, they do their first couple of cold calls, they book in a meeting, they love it and they're addicted. And then they're in all day, every day, just banging out calls. And people that no matter how hard they try, they're just still terrified of it.
Yeah.
And so we also want to play into their individual strengths as well.
Okay. Yeah, I think like especially in Europe, it's a really good idea to go back to cold calling.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of really great content out there. So for me, I would recommend like to follow Josh Brown, who's like, I'll put the link in the episode page. But like Josh Brown is really good at like how you approach a cold call and these kind of things. And in Europe, it's actually a channel that is not used so much, or it's used a lot in B2C to sell you insurance and these kind of things.
Yeah.
But in B2B, I think there's a huge opportunity. And let's say with video, as you said, they do that a lot at HubSpot or Intercom. It works really well. I would actually recommend something. Quick hack is on LinkedIn, instead of using, let's say, your computer to go to LinkedIn.com, use the app, and there's a small, you can actually leave voicemails. And so it sounds in the message where it's like a little blue square, blue rectangle. And it's like, it's working super well. So I think in cold calling, using voice into a different way, I think there's great opportunities there. So I think it's a pretty cool thing to do.
Yeah, it's also a great way to, just to hit on a question you asked before about keeping the team motivated and engaged.
Yeah.
Tweaking the role itself in this way is a really nice way to do it. Because I mean, let's be honest, if somebody is, you know, if we're expecting them to only use one channel and to stay in that role for any period of time, they're not going to do that.
Yeah.
They're going to be sick of it in no time. So if we keep, you know, almost reinventing it in this way, or adding more tools and allowing people to explore what works best for them, obviously whilst, you know, guiding them to a certain number of qualified opportunities coming in, then I think it's a really nice way to keep people engaged.
Yeah, exactly. Good. So now is the time for you to promote whatever you have to promote. So yeah, tell us, you know, where can people talk to you, and what's next for you?
Yeah, so I don't have any social media except LinkedIn.
Okay.
So you can find me on there, /AndrewGreenUK. If you just search my name and then cobalt.io, you'll find me easily on there as well. One thing I would like to mention at this point is that, like I say, the topic of the podcast is, the episode is the BDR team. We're growing that. It's going to double again in the next 12 months. So we're always, you know, up for speaking to people about that. If you think this sounds like a company you want to join, which I guess it should be, then yeah, feel free to give me a shout there. You can also find it online, go on cobalt.io, scroll to the bottom, hit the careers button.
Yeah. And can people like directly get in touch with you on LinkedIn to ask about the role?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Because often in companies like that, you have a referral bonus when you bring in someone. So definitely contact Andy directly so he gets his money.
Thank you.
Cool. So thanks so much, Andy. It was super great to have you there. And I'll talk to you soon, and we'll keep in touch.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode. If you like what you hear, you can go to b2bsalespodcast.com to subscribe to the newsletter. You will receive the episode in your mailbox every second and fourth Wednesday of the month. And don't forget to follow the episode on Spotify or subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. And finally, if you know someone who could like that episode, feel free to share it.